Sega's Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here, and I am with the one and only Disco Inferno, Glenn Gilberti. How you doing, Glenn?
Pretty good, man. What's going on?
Not much. You know, being here in Las Vegas, you've been here a while now. Snake Pit, you've helped train some of the future stars of wrestling. You've worked a little bit with FSW. What have you found in terms of, I know, going back quite some time, I think in an interview in 2004 you did, where you said that something like booking was something that you like to do. How has training, guys, been for you? Have you enjoyed being able to guide, you know, the younger talent in terms of how to develop a character and what it's, you know, like to be in one of the bigger companies?
Because I like it, but I don't do the grunt work.
Right.
Like I'm very specific when I would have one class a week at Future Stars Wrestling, and it was just a very specific class. I would teach punching, kicking, and selling, and character stuff. You know, but because I said, look, if you're gonna, people are gonna train under me, if like you're gonna come out of this FSW system, you know, you're gonna look like you as a shoot, you look like you know how to fight.
Right.
Like you look like you know how to throw a punch. You look like you know how to BP. You look like you know how to do it, because there's a lot of what you see in wrestling today that we've gotten away from the basic skills,
right,
and increase the difficult skills. You know, we do more of the difficult stuff, the springboards and the dives and stuff. You do all that, and like when professional wrestlers do these things, punching, kicking, you know, they don't do it very well,
right?
Because like that's not the basics of a wrestling match today. The basic of a wrestling match today is just, you know, this new term that came about, you know, sequences and spots and stuff, and it's, you know, it's, and everything's put together in the back and it's mapped out and it's laid out, and it's just when things break down in a match, you see how green some of these people are, that they can't just, you know, pick up where they left off sometimes or called in the ring and stuff. And that's just a skill that you separate, you know, the good workers from the bad workers, I think, with those details, because there's a lot of things that wrestlers do today that I have a lot of pet peeves on, that make the product look bad.
Yeah.
Because if so many people, there's a lot of bad habits that so many wrestlers do it, that in 9 hours of TV every week, when you're watching this and you're watching this happen over and over, the product itself looks poor. Like what I'm talking about is like when guys like shoot a guy in and go to throw a clothesline, you got look like you're trying to actually hit the guy with the clothesline. Half the guys you do, they just stick their arm out. You know, it doesn't look like an offensive maneuver.
Right.
And this other spot that everybody and their mother's doing today, where the guy just aimlessly runs at the guy in the rope, it doesn't look like he's trying to attack him or anything, and the guy just backdrops him over the top rope, and the guy lands on the apron.
Right.
And it looks like you see it so much, it just looks very fake in the middle of what they're doing. And they do these spots, and you're not hiding how fake the work looks. And, you know, they're slapping their thighs, which is the worst one, because you're basically telling the audience blatantly, hey, I'm not making the sound. I'm slapping my leg to make the sound, so this is a fake kick.
Right.
You know, like, this is so, and it's just like you add all that up and you see it so often, the product looks very poor. So I try to tell, when I would train guys, I'd say, we're going to correct our bad habits. If you have a bad habit, we cease it at that point and try to, you know, correct the bad habit. But you just see so many bad habits today and nobody correcting them.
Right.
You know, and that's why you see guys like, you know, like Chris Bay, Cross, you know, some other guys down there, Damian Drake, you know, all these guys can throw and sell punches and kicks and stuff because they look like they know how to fight.
Right.
You know? So it's like, you know, that's the thing I think that is missing from the training in the product, is trying to make it look more realistic instead of trying to raise the bar higher for the acrobatics and stuff, which is what people apparently think makes a good worker these days, which it doesn't.
You know, and focusing, you know, the fact that you had a character that was comedic, but your work rate looked believable. So not only were you good in the ring, but you also were believable as the character because you bought into it and you understood the basics of what you were trying to do story-wise. Is it a lost art form to some point that when some of these guys walk out of the curtain, you can see that they're basically just going to have a wrestling match? There's no intention.
They don't even know how to do ring entrance. They don't even know how to do ring entrance, half of them. They don't know how to embrace time. You know, like they walk out on the stage, it looks like they're in a... half these guys are. They don't even have a ring entrance. If they get there, they hurry up and get to the ring because they have so much stuff called in their match, they have to hurry up and start the match so they can get all the stuff in. That's what it looks like. You know, like they rush to the ring. They don't know how to... Like you watch Randy Orton, watch Roman Reigns, and watch green guys do ring entrances. And it's completely night and day. You know, like the pros know how to do it. They know how to stop, get the pose. I mean, the thing is with the ring entrance, these guys don't even realize, bro, you don't have a character, okay? And you're not giving the announcers any time to talk about you at all.
Yeah.
You know, me and Jim Ross, we had Ross on the podcast, and I was telling him, bro, look, you know, Jim Ross is a narrator. Yes. That was his skill as a professional wrestling announcer. He would narrate what was going on to deliver the narrative to you, the story that's being told. You know, and like there's so many times now in wrestling, you know, like we'd have Jim in the show. It's like, bro, he doesn't have time to narrate anything. Right. He's calling one move after another. And is this, bro, you wonder why these guys have no characters? Because they're filling their match with all action, and no, the announcers never have a chance to talk about these guys.
Right.
You know, it's like people don't realize things like that because when you're green, it just doesn't even compute because you haven't learned these things yet. You know, and it's funny that like these people aren't even teaching these guys this.
Right.
You know, it's like you watch the difference. Well, watch. Here's the difference. You know, NXT, you know, AEW beats NXT in the ratings every week, right?
Right.
And people are going, oh, well, you know, the NXT booking site, you know, and you're watching the two shows, and when you're watching the shows side by side. You know, which what we do. There's a definite difference in quality in the show that's doing lesser ratings because right. the production machine of the WWE, the product looks far superior.
Right.
The entrances, the characters, the vignettes, everything they do production wise looks very professional compared to AEW, which sometimes look kind of amateurish a little bit, right?
Right.
But the difference between those two shows is that you know. One show has more star power. Yeah. You know, one show has Chris Jericho, has John Moxley stuff. You know, like, bro, you're not going to sit there and tell me that, like, you know, Private Party is like drawing numbers against, Finn Balor, you know, the Undisputed right. Era. That's like, that's not where the difference is. The difference is when Chris Jericho is coming out, you know, with MJF, and it's going up against Ever-Rise.
Right.
You know, like, so people, NXT is too many guys that people just do not know yet. But that's what the whole show is designed for.
Right.
To try to get you to know these people because you watch what they do there. The production machine in WWE gives you a chance in NXT. They give you right. a lot of vignettes. They give you production. They give you good ring entrance. They give you good music. They give you, you know, they teach you how to be a character, which is what they're doing then there. And you're watching these guys learn. And, you know, from a critical guy like me that's booked, that's trained and stuff, everything, I like watching that stuff.
Right.
I didn't before because I thought most of these guys were green. Then I started watching. It's like, wow, the actual work in NXT is very polished.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of good detail work on the show. And they're so underrated. But the Undisputed Era are just like four professional wrestlers that never have a bad moment on TV, you know.
Right.
And you have guys like that. So they produce good television, but just people just don't know them, you know. And it's like – go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, along those lines, too, one of the things, last year you called Cody out on, are you a face or a heel? And his response was, well, that's the brilliance of wrestling now. You can be either or because it's just about the match and, you know, the fans can react how they want to that match as you're telling the story there. To me, that's like saying, well... You know what? I like the Blues Brothers, but I only like the Blues Brothers because of the musical numbers. And that's what I'm going to focus on, and that's it. And it's like, well, wait, there's a whole flush to these characters and why you're invested. And that really, it just makes me mad, because when I trained 20 years ago at UPW, Tom Howard... I mean, he would just lay out everything and how it's supposed to be done. And a guy like Cody, you look at his dad and you go, I get that Cody's trying to do something different and be unique, but at the same time, there's fundamentals in not only wrestling, but just in general storytelling that makes it easier for people to follow and enjoy and to build the product, because you do have names. And you're right, every time I watch NXT, I'm invested because something is pulling at my heartstrings. When I watch AEW, there might be some good stuff, and there are so many people I love. Well, the
show,
the
AEW show is just and I called this even before we did this interview. Is like I've seen a couple of things, bro. The guy's a South Park mark. Okay, so the tone of that show is comedic,
right?
Like I mean, if there's the eight angles on the show, six of them have comedic undertones.
Yeah,
you know, Cody's stuff is usually serious. Moxley's stuff is usually serious. The rest of the stuff is like it's a punchline.
Yeah,
like the vignette, you know, like I mean, even like you know, like you said, like Miro laying out the best friends and thing, you know, and it's like, yeah, but this is a guy that's like mad because somebody broke his video game, you know. It's like, you know, so it's like you're looking at a vicious attack and they go, why is he, you know, this guy's a video game player, he's mad that somebody broke his video, and so it's like it's corny, you know.
Yeah,
so you can't invest. And the thing is, we're in this era where Meltzer's the dirt sheet guys have cultivated this fan base of critics.
Yeah,
they're just critics that rate them, you know, like movie. You go around the fans these days are Rotten Tomato users because they're rating everything. You know, just but they're rating the work.
Yeah,
you know, the technical aspect, the scientific wrestling. They're rating that, and they've never done this before. You know, and you created this environment where that's all anybody cares about, and they're trying to say, well, the angles don't really mean much as long as you have a good match out there. And I would say this to all of these people. I say, where is your evidence that this is successful?
Right.
Because there's nothing. Bro, we've taken the lowest numbers in the history of wrestling, and they try to, you know, they spit-shined it up and made it sound like, wow, these numbers are great. I'm like, 0.3? I'm like, bro, that's a breathalyzer number. I'm like, you know, that's like a job. We were doing 6.5s.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, like, you know, we had 10, 11, 12 million people watching the show. You know, you guys can't even get a million people to watch this.
Yep.
And you're trying to tell me there's never been a tiny bit better time to be a wrestling fan? Then where are all the fans?
Yeah.
You know, if it's never been a better time to be a wrestling fan, shouldn't there be a lot of fans? We've lost 80% of the fans over the years. And this is research that's been done by Variety Magazine. We have the metrics, and we know why people aren't watching. It's because the number one thing is wrestling is too cartoonish. And after every segment that I watch these shows, SmackDown, Raw, and everything that I watch, you know, fast forward through them, whatever I watch, I ask myself at the end of the segment, was that cartoonish or not? Because if people are trying to engage in the product and the cartoonishness is turning them off, are we still giving them too much cartoonishness? And I say, yes, we absolutely are.
Yeah.
Way too much. I mean, we had an angle, one of the best angles that wrestling fans were waiting on since AEW started was the veteran, one of the best guys in the history of on the mic, Chris Jericho, against the up-and-coming stud on the mic, MJF, and instead they just did Saturday Night Live comedy routines the whole time. When we could have seen the two guys, like the old school guy and the new school guys, go back and forth on the mic for weeks, and they just scrapped it and did comedy. You know, and I'm like, I'm just saying, like, bro, why do you think people, why don't you have, why is Raw, then everybody buries Raw, everybody buries the WWE. I go, why is it doing twice as many viewers as you then?
Yeah.
Why are twice as many people watching that product? You know, I mean, you know, whatever. It's like, you guys are not drawing, you know, they're bragging about beating NXT. They invented this war that NXT, bro, has NXT, the WWE system, have they ever, this is funny, not one from any of their accounts has anybody ever tweeted about the ratings, even when they beat them in a week?
Right.
This thing is created by the guys and stuff. Just because all Vince McMahon did, he founded a new company, he's going up there. Okay, we're just going to counter program against him, so because that's what promoters do. Yep. You know, I'm going to take my show off the network. I'm going to put it next to them, so not every, you know, just a counter program. Yeah. And that's all it is. This isn't a war. Like NXT's trying to, like, you watch the way they book their show, they're not booking for ratings.
Right.
Because they start the show sometimes with 20-minute matches, and I'm like, bro, you're just giving me a chance to turn the channel here. If this is, you know, like last week, perfect example, they were going to have Edge of the show. I say, oh, they might do a good number. I'm listening to the show the whole time. They're not even mentioning Edge for the first hour of the show.
Right.
And I'm like, why wouldn't you just started with that and stuff, you know? So they don't book, they're not booking like it's a ratings war.
Right.
They're not they're not programming ratings wise. They're just sticking their show on the TV so less people watch the other show. You know, right. And that's all it is. And people try to make up the Wednesday night wars and stuff. They're like, bro, the numbers on the Wednesday night are worse than are combined. They're the lowest of the week. And Wednesday was supposed to be the big night. Yeah. I go, so the fans aren't even gravitating to Wednesday night when we have the war. They're still watching Raw and SmackDown, even in low numbers, but that's the main shows, you know? And yeah. SmackDown is weird. It's a good show, you know, because some of the angles, there's a couple of the angles on there are strong angles that they're doing with great stuff, you know, Roman and stuff. I like the stuff with Dominic. They're doing some good stuff, and it's just fascinating that how can this system produce one show that looks like that, and then you have Raw,
right?
And they look like two completely different shows because Raw is just corny, you know, kind of goofy stuff. Miz and Morrison, who are two stars, are doing buddy cop comedy, and I'm just looking at this going, God almighty, you know what, how many times do we have to do serious stuff, watch it work, and think, okay, let's continue down this path?
Yeah,
you know, and it's just like, I guess because you get all these writers in there and these marks, and they're not from wrestling, and they're not, and they like silly, funny stuff, and it's, you know, everything's silly and funny because that's the way they write. You don't have anybody writing serious drama. I heard, you know, Paul and Roman are basically booking this whole thing. Yeah. You know that they're doing. Yeah. So it's like, you know, they're doing, you know, and the writers are like fudging the rest of the show because they're doing goofy, corny crap. So it's like, you know, I don't know. It's just frustrating to watch wrestling, you know, become as cartoonish as it has, and the work too looks cartoonish in the real. You know, everything's right. Funny. The work looks nonsensical, you know, stuff and anything. And so when you see stuff like a good brawl every once in a while, like it opens my eyes, you know. So
right, you know, that's SmackDown. And thinking of good performers, it's interesting because Sami Zayn is now just to me,
yeah, excellent stuff.
Oh my god,
by far.
And
he embraced. Here's the thing about that. He's everybody. That's what he's like.
Yeah.
He's taking his real life. He's the guy's a complainer. He's like, they're just doing his real life. And just, I mean, that's why he looks so comfortable doing this gimmick. It's because, you know, that's the thing. It's finding guys comfortable in the gimmicks that they're giving them is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
Because you can see just the fright in people's eyes sometimes when they're cutting promos and trying to remember the words and recite the script. It just doesn't look natural. But Sami Zayn stuff is excellent right now.
And that, what I was going to bring it to is that, with when you were approached with the Disco character, was that something that was an extension of kind of who you are, being that, you know,
not so much. I okay. liked disco music. I wouldn't like, you know, that I wouldn't think, but it was to me because I was a student of the game and I, you know, I'd studied wrestling so much growing up. I was just, as I said, oh, this is easy. It's just, I'm a mark for the Honky Tonk Man character. The way he produces his character, it's just, I'm going to just do the exact same thing. Because Honky would do his, like, his little dance moves that he would do in the middle. I said, I'm just going to do disco when it's time to do that in the match. And that's, and just pattern myself after that character. You know, I'm just and so it was easy to do the character. Because I'm just, okay, I'm just basically doing the Honky Tonk Man, but it's a disco character. It's not a the country, you know, it's not a guitar playing character, you know?
Yeah.
So then I just did it. So, and then that's how easy it was, you know, so.
Being from the East Coast, was there a lot of you know, you were younger when Saturday Night Fever came out. Do you remember that tail end from the, you know, like 79 into 80 when disco did kind of die out? And what was it like for you going into high school at that point then in the 80s? Were you more of a metalhead, or, you know, what kind of classic influences?
Classic rock. I just it was you know, I grew up in an era. You know, if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, you grew up in, you know, during an era of just great music.
Yeah,
you no know, kidding. Like with, you know, U2, Led Zeppelin, you know, AC/DC. I mean, there's so many great you know, yeah. A-list bands that are still doing it today.
Yeah.
40-something years later, that's how good they are. You know, they're yeah. 70 and they're still making it. I just grew up in an era of incredible music. And then when I got into wrestling, I started getting in, because we were clubbing a lot, I got into EDM music. You know,
sure.
You know, techno and stuff. Yeah, just DJ sets and everything. And that's my music, is DJ music. I got a few good DJs I follow, listen to their sets, and I listen to rock and roll, classic rock.
When you do the podcast with Russo, one of the things I like about both you guys is that you guys don't hold back. You guys are honest with your opinions. Mm-hmm. Is it something that when Vince came over to WCW, did you immediately start a friendship with him? Was he someone you could relate to, or did it take time over the years for you to kind of warm up to each other?
We sat next to each other on a plane ride and got to know each other.
Nice.
That was like the start of it. I never probably would have had a conversation with him like that if we hadn't had that like 2 hours on the plane next to each other.
Yeah, because
we were basically, you know, that's how it started.
It's funny that he gets, you know, such a knock for shit that people don't understand, and you get such a knock for shit people don't understand.
Well, brother, it's because the wrestling media is very, it's just like the regular mainstream media. They're very dishonest people.
Well, and it's even,
you know, they're literally trying to paint the picture that Vince was like the worst writer ever,
right?
You know, and like when the evidence is like completely opposite of that,
right?
You know, so it's like they're literally trying to cultivate a fan base of people to try to get them to forget that when Vince started, we were crushing them in the ratings, and Vince started writing the show, and they ended up crushing us in the ratings, right?
Right.
And when we were already crushing the ratings because Vince crushed us, we brought Vince and Ed came over to us,
right?
You know, and it took him a year to beat us in the ratings, and we didn't give him any time. And like, you know, he never got a chance. But all they're basing their history of Vince Russo is the time he spent in WCW.
Exactly.
And that defines his career. When he, if you think about how ridiculously illogical their argument is, like, bro, the guy wrote the show that crushed your show.
Yeah.
Then he went over to try to help your show get the ratings back against the show that you just crushed, and they gave him like, you know, a 3 month period and 6 month period. That was it, and it's like, you didn't give the guy any time, and we're trying to say, well, though he was terrible.
And
it's like, bro, you didn't give the guy like that. It's like, this is like if you took, like, I always say, like, is Vince Russo the worst writer ever? Right? If we took that to a court of law and like argued it in front of a judge and jury and like presented all the evidence, it would be a laughable case.
Right.
That they would even be bringing the case against him. You know, it's ridiculous.
And on top of that, he came in to replace Bischoff, who WCW was not happy with at the time, and then you all of a sudden think Russo isn't doing what you brought him in to do, and who do you bring back? The guy you had replaced. There was no logic to a lot of stuff going on with the inside workings. Well, I know you gotta head out really quick. I just wanted to you know, get you on for a little bit, talk a little wrestling, and hopefully we can do this again sometime. And you know, again, your podcasts are great. Being with Conan is one of, you know, one of the coolest combinations out there, and the stuff you do with Vince is great. And I encourage everyone to follow you on social media, as well as listen to the shows. And how are you doing in terms of dealing with the Vegas shutdown? Have you still been able to?
We're back. Our club opened up November 13th.
Okay,
so, with social distance protocols and everything.
Perfect.
So it's like we've been back to. I've been back to work. Our club is open. It's not topless anymore. It's just a bikini bar.
Yeah.
There's no lap dancing. There's no, and it's just we've been fine. We've been doing well.
And we'll see you next.
Let me give you my shout. Let me give my plugs here.
Yes, please.
If you want to follow me, I'm on at the real disco on Twitter and at Disco Master Gigi on Snapchat and Instagram. I'm hardly ever on Snapchat. Instagram, I do some stuff. Also, you can catch me on Keep It 100 with Conan. Drops Thursdays on Spreaker and MLW Radio. And also our Patreon is Conan.me, Conan.me. A lot of fan interaction, a lot of roundtables with fans and stuff, and tons of content. We put so much content out there, it's ridiculous. So check that out. And also, I do the shows with Vince. Time Out is on his the Russo brand. What's the TWC? What's it called? Truth or Con, Russo Brand TWC, his Patreon.
Yeah.
And I'm on the Realm Network, my show Lions, Tigers, Bears, and Disco, that drops Friday. We do all the news of the week and stuff with him and Jeff Wayne.
excellent, man. Appreciate it. And brother, can't wait to see what else is going on in the future with you. And man, keep it up.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you. All right, everyone, have a great time, and we'll see you next time.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.